This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
On November 5th, 2021, the Norris Group proudly presented our 14th annual I Survived Real Estate charity event. Industry experts joined Bruce and Aaron Norris to discuss evolving industry trends, real estate bubbles, inflation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. All proceeds from the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. We want to thank our platinum partners, San Diego Creative Investors Association, Wilson Investment Properties, UDirect IRA Services. See isurvivedrealestate.com for event details, information on all our generous sponsors, watch the video uninterrupted, and to connect with our speakers.
All right, Dad, we've got 45 minutes. We're going to start opening it up for questions, but how about we start with you to get the roundtable going?
Sure. Fannie Mae just announced a big increase in the loan balance. So, excuse me, the
FHA loan limits?
Not FHA. FHA, I think it's announced later or maybe in December, but this is Fannie Mae's loan limit. It went up, I think, what, $75,000, Doug?
Yeah, the official release hasn't come out, but it'll be at least that. And it's FHFA, the Federal Housing Finance Agency, that does the calculation and releases that. So it should be coming out shortly. You've already seen some lenders are actually making loans close to what they think the projected amount will be. There was some discussion in the industry about with the outsized house price increases in last year, that is 2020, 15% nationally, and this year it looks like we're pretty close to 20% nationally, whether or not they would move the limit up that far or not, but it appears that they're probably going to take it to the level that the formula that they use suggests is the maximum.
When you have a big rise in the maximum loan, what typically happens to the two worlds, the purchase world and the loan refi world? Do they get very busy and prices attempt to run to that new limit?
Well, certainly there is an interest rate advantage in being under the limit. So you always see just if you plot how many loans are made at what level, then you see a bulge of loans just below the limit because it's the interest rate differential is worth people paying a little more equity, for example, to get just below that limit than going above it and paying the jumbo level of fees. So activity moves up with the limit for sure.
What's interesting about a lot of things that we've talked about, housing shortage and the cost increases, what that does, puts the demand that can't land on new homes to existing homes. So in California, existing homes have been more expensive than new homes per square foot only four times, 80, 89, 05, and right now. So the cost of an old home per square foot is benefiting from you not being able to get a refrigerator to show up to your new house.
Now, yeah, there's a number of interesting anecdotes. The one I was my favorite was when the month supply of existing homes reached 1.9 months. There was a story that ran that said there were essentially the same number of homes for sale as there were realtors. So you could imagine each realtor trying to sell their home.
their one home transaction for this.
Right.
Oh my goodness. So if you have questions, if you want to type them in the Q&A, that would be great. Especially if it can touch multiple of the panelists, that would be awesome.
Can I ask I'm going to ask this of anybody that wants input. Inflation, I'll just say a little bit my story. 74 to 80 was inflationary, but I owned a home and it took off and allowed me to buy three homes and it took off. And by 1979, I owned a free and clear house and it was a big deal. Had I been renting, my rent would have exploded and my life would have been very different. So what we've experienced right now, if you own rentals, you've gotten one heck of an increase in the last 24 months. And so I know Fannie Mae does a lot of good and have programs to reach out for first time buyers, a lot more than people think they do. But is there any special program that's being contemplated by Fannie Mae to reach across the aisle and say, okay, you can afford to own, you don't have maybe a down payment or something, but is there any willingness to let more people into ownership? Because that's a big benefit going forward.
Yeah, one of the things that we've, in my group, which is called the Economic and Strategic Research Group, had looked at and talked to the leadership about was the one of the kinds of programs that has historically been successful in helping people is down payment assistance. And it depends on how it's delivered, but there are ways to deliver down payment assistance that do not distort the incentives of the parties to the transaction. So for example, a few years ago, there was a move by FHA to eliminate a builder assisted down payment because essentially that assistance was being bid into the price of the property. The foreclosure rates on those particular products were substantially higher. So that program was terminated. But that doesn't mean that down payment assistance isn't, if delivered correctly, isn't helpful. And so I think you're seeing discussion of that across the policy arena, whether or not there's a way to deliver on that kind of a product.
Is there any willingness to take, okay, we've got, let's say this is the best interest rates we'll ever see in our life. Maybe it's not true, but we've got all this 2% money in a fixed loan. Is there any willingness to let that walk forward to another transaction? In other words, and I'm not talking about formal assumption, I'm talking about somebody takes over the loan and it's current. Is that why that might be a very helpful thing if that is a blend of the transactions? Let's say interest rates change to 5, but you have an entire pile of loans in place at 2 or 3. That might be very supportive of price and may in fact prevent a foreclosure issue.
Well, there's certainly some discussion of that. I wouldn't say that it's ready to come to market in the near term. Yeah, I know we've had some conversations on that issue, and economists are fairly supportive of that as a strategy. And certainly the attractive component of that is the prevention of a foreclosure.
Yeah,
because it's pretty much losses all around the foreclosure. So I think that's the attractive and the angle in which that could see the light of day.
Well, what's really interesting in 80 and 81, so you have the worst charts ever, interest rates 17, unemployment's 10%, inventory explodes by, I think it's probably 15 months, and you don't have a price decline. And half of the transactions were allowed to happen with existing financing that had 7% mortgages instead of 15. That kind of saved the day. So it's just nice sometimes to look back in history and go, okay, that's not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. We have some questions coming in. Martin asks, many people are negative on California, but I understand many are still buying. Can you comment on which types of companies individuals are buying and why they are buying with so many bailing out of California? Which areas of California? Where's the money going? I'll start. It was interesting. I was pulling some data, I think, in Texas on entities, flippers particularly. And I was very surprised year over year to see that there were so many different entities, like completely new. And some had completely disappeared. So I was really surprised, but the flipping was still going on. It was just with different companies. And of course, real estate investors could technically be changing entities. But I've seen here in California, a lot of people have retired. They had a really great run from 2009 till now, and they're repositioning their portfolios and they're just focusing on the rentals. They're building ADUs. They're doing less flipping. So I've definitely have seen my fair share of flippers retiring, but I still see plenty of people doing it. There are some people who are just diehard Californians. You got your Aaron Mazzarillos, the Mike Cantus. I follow people all the time that just actually they're trying to get closer to where they live, not necessarily trying to go to Zizek's to build flip a house out there. So I think people just gravitate to where they're most comfortable in the price point and the inventory that makes sense for them.
What's Anybody really else? Interesting about the charts, if you take a look at the migration loss of California, it's been significant, but you haven't had a price decline. You've had a price explosion. So, you know, you scratch your head and go, okay, well, that's interesting. So how does that occur? And part of it is what Cornelius was talking about. When you have, there's a cycle of construction, new single family construction. Typically you hit a bottom at 60,000, you go up to 150,000, and the year before 150, 130, 120, 110. Well, you take an accumulative 10 years of that. In the last 10 years, we built 45,000 single family homes when we should have averaged 110. That's 650,000 homes that were supposed to be out there that are not. And so you can have some people leave and you still have a housing shortage, which is rather an astonishing thing.
We're working on a project with a major university on the migration question, right? And the reality is, like, we're still looking at like things like U-Haul trucks, right? And the data is just really, really, really crappy. I mean, it's just, we don't know is really the true answer right now. And, you know, like a lot of people say we're losing the high end, but it feels like, you know, the folks we're losing are the folks that maybe can't make it here and they're getting replaced by people who can, right? The economy generally gets stronger here. So, but you know, we don't know. There's lots of different hypotheses. Nobody knows, right? And
you know, love that U-Haul chart, by the way. I love it.
But is it?
I would also
are the people? Yeah, you know.
Go ahead.
I would also add the media attention is mostly people leaving the state, but there's a lot of internal migration. A lot of people are leaving the Bay Area, coming to Sacramento. A lot of people are leaving L.A. moving to Riverside, San Bernardino, or the Central Valley. So a lot of the analysis has not been done about internal migration within California.
Yeah. And I think it would make sense if you were trying to get a head start or get your first start, an 800 grand median price be a little tough.
You know, with $200,000 in school debt. Go you.
Well, Aaron, I loved your point when we were doing the prep where you talked about like a lot of people haven't gone through a winter and where they've moved, and all of a sudden, like, once they get to the other side, it's like, oh, what did I do?
Yeah, Sean, I told her the story about people who are experiencing Tahoe for their first winter and rolling their trucks down the hill. And so you've got the great migration, but maybe you have the great re-migration. Be like, yeah, maybe I should.
Yeah, it's a big question. I mean, we had a really mild winter last year and we still had some of those stories. And what happens when we have a big winter, right? You know, that's when I first moved here, the first thing, you know, people would say, well, we can't really be friends till you've been here like 3 to 5 years because everybody leaves, right? And a big winter is a lot different than a mild winter. I mean, it's a completely different experience. And we had a mild winter last year. So a lot of people right now are bullish on being here full time, but it'll be interesting to see a lot of things like that. A lot of people moved a lot of places, you know, on kind of a wing and a prayer, a hope and a dream. And I think we're going to see some percentage of those people go, oh, that was a mistake. Right. And that's going to be good for the real estate industry because that's going to cause more churn and more movement and more transactions. But I do think, you know, over the next couple of years, we're going to see some people unwind the things they did the last couple of years. I think we're going to see some people be really happy with their change too. Right. Like, but it'll be a mix and I think it'll cause some mixing.
I'm curious, do you think the pendulum will swing with, I have to believe that employers will want their employees to come back to work. Even if they said that they were going to allow them to work full time from home, maybe they'll see the pendulum swing back. Have you guys thought about that or predicted that in any way?
That's why Facebook rebranded Meta. We're going to do the metaverse. We're going to put our virtual reality glasses on and, you know, kumbaya around a virtual reality fireplace, right? Very interesting.
I think the swing to remote's relatively permanent. I think, I don't think we go back to the same degree of cube farms that we had before. there's a Business Week back from the late 90s that in the, I think I'm on in the centerfold. Our company was one of the first to bring in pool tables and, you know, we had a beer tasting with the founder of Samuel Adams, like in our company, right? And we did all these things. And I got to be honest, you know, it was very leading edge at the time. We were a workforce management company, so we were trying to be leaders. But at the end of the day, it was about keeping people in the office a lot longer, right? Absolutely. And a lot of people talk about how great that is and the slides and this and the that. You know, at my company, right, I want to come in and work really hard and get out as fast as possible to go out and go skiing, mountain biking, and go do stuff. And I want focused, you know, quality time. For some people, you know, like a lot of software engineers, I'm the most, as a software engineer, I am super productive, like 11 to 2 a.m., 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. Like that's when I get my flow state going, right? And, you know, as employers, we should embrace that, right? And maybe you have a 3-hour flow state and that's the whole entire productive piece that you have, but that may be 5 times more productive than sitting around an office getting interrupted all day. I think it changes forever.
That's so interesting because that's going to change so many markets. Idaho, you look at the places where a lot of people migrated to and all of a sudden they've brought those. Do you think the incomes will stay the same? Will they keep the Silicon Valley money in their small town rural market?
No. I mean, yes and no. You're seeing some companies say yes and some companies say no. And, you know, right now I think it's all bets are off because so many people are just going, you know what, I'm going to go gig it for a while. So I think that's yet to be determined. I think I will say that like real estate search is broken. I give a shit about city, right? Every single real estate site, enter your city. City, city, city. I don't care about city. Tell me where good skiing is. Tell me where good, whatever the thing is that I love to do, where am I going to find a lot of people that love to do that thing, right? And there are still going to be a lot of jobs that are, you know, hospitals you can't really do remote. So if I'm a nurse, like, where can I go where I'm going to get the best cost of living and be able to, whatever it is, ride my road bike. Where's the best place for that? Not a single real estate search site out there that does that. And I don't think people have rethought, right? Everybody's gone, well, I live here because I have a job. So now I need to look for real estate here in this location. I think that's broken. I think that's completely gone. And every real estate portal website out there is completely has the wrong approach.
I need to talk to you because we're actually building up our new site. So maybe I can make you part of my user research.
Love to. From the home builder perspective, the work from home has really increased the demand and consumer preference for a home office, smart homes, and obviously robust Wi-Fi service. So those are the things that I think will be with us for the long term.
Cornelius, I was going to ask you this. Is the average square footage, it's been declining for a number of years that the builders were building. Is it going to go back up?
You know, a lot of people are moving to buy more room. Yeah, so we've seen that. We've seen that new product, the increased square footage of product types.
Okay. Question. Chris asks, do you see 40 to 50 year mortgage loan programs to help make high cost housing more affordable monthly? Anybody think 40 to 50 year loans are going to become norm?
I do. I think we're going to follow Japan. I think it's just a matter of time till we're 40, 50 year mortgages in the ones.
It's certainly possible. I think an important market signal would be if the federal government could rationalize their view of what constitutes infrastructure and float 40-year treasury bills to fund actual infrastructure investment, that's a good investment at 2% or 2.5%. That's actually a good investment. If that signal went into the market, you may then see in the mortgage space some following of that. But I think it might take a signal of that strong to get it going.
If we could get a 50-year loan at minus two, it just pays for itself.
Right.
I'm in. Aaron asks, will the affordability get much worse as huge increase in property prices far outpaces wage increases? If so, will the price correct back to equilibrium?
Okay, that for who?
Whoever wants to take it.
Well, right now you're at about 23%. California does have a history of getting to 17 repetitively, and when the lending world wasn't being honest with who actually should get a loan, it got lower. So if 17's the breaking point, you've hit it number of times. And so if you hit it in 2022, it'll be the fourth time. But the outcomes have been different. In 1980, you didn't have a price decline. 89, you had from 90 to 96, you had about a 15% or so price decline, and then prices crashed in 09. The difference was how many foreclosures dominated what was for sale. And so really the question, it's a great question, but the answer actually is what's going to be the policy of how many foreclosures are going to enter the marketplace simultaneously? Because if it's pretty much just what's for sale by owner, the owner is not going to be super motivated to take a gigantic discount or lose the property because he's got a 50% equity position at a 2.5% mortgage rate. So patience would be fine. And they just said, okay, well, I just won't sell it now. That's really the dominant thing. So there's the problem. So it's a great question. How do you get back to a high affordability? See, that's the difficulty now. You're really going to need that 1% mortgage rate because from 17.5 to 2.5, we had a 40-year journey where affordability got replenished. We hit that number, but affordability got replenished because prices went down and interest rates went down, and all of a sudden they recovered. So you got back to 30% affordability. 2009, we were at 50+% affordability. Now we've gone down to almost 20 again. So that's really the problem going forward for California, is that when you get to 17% and you're at 3% mortgage rate, where do you go? If you just bounce at 17, then you won't have a price increase possible, because in an honest lending environment, you get told no. You know, again, that's when people are really excited about buying homes at the peak of the markets. That's just human nature. But if you get told no, then that's the end of the volume. And there's a series of charts that do get negative. But I don't see the willingness to foreclose on a bunch of people this time. I just don't.
I would add, yeah, you know, it's not just foreclosures, right? It's any distressed seller or sellers that can put enough, you know, in. So in the 90s, you did have home builders discounting, and that, you know, it was a lower drop certainly than we had in 2008. I don't think we'll see 2008, but a lot of people say, well, what if the institutional investors dump, or Zillow dumps homes in, you know, Phoenix or things like that? There are other possibilities of dumping homes, but I don't see it. You know, I think it would take, I just don't see, you know, I think it's obvious enough that dumping homes becomes a, you know, a self reinforcing circle after 2008. I don't see any of those groups doing it again, but I do think there are other possibilities than foreclosures.
Yeah, two quick thoughts. One is the millennials, depending on how you measure that population group, the peak of that group reaching 31, which is the median age at which first-time homebuyers happen. That's roughly 3 years from now. You're also seeing an increasing share of the boomers, the leading edge of the boomers, that are going to start moving to assisted living, which means freeing up supply. So you'll simultaneously, 3 to 4 years from now, you're going to see some movement on both easing of demand and increasing of supply. Now, in some markets, to your point, Sean, in some markets, you might see, if there were some institutional investors that looked at both the capital gains benefit and the cash flow benefit, and the capital gains go away because prices flatten, you might, in selected markets, see some selected exits. But I'm with you. I don't think it will be massive. And I've forgotten the other thought that I had. So it's 10 o'clock.
That's a great East Coast. I know. I think you did answer Bruce's question, though, that it's demographics that create the next buying opportunity.
Yeah.
I just want to also add this real quickly on the public policy side, particularly in the land use soft cost part of home building, there are a lot of things that are very worrisome that might make the affordability crisis worse. I mean, rent control on the statewide ballot in California has been defeated twice. There's talk of it returning. Various local rent control ordinance we helped to defeat, inclusionary zoning, environmental regulations. There's a new rules in new cities are a lot not allowing natural gas, only electric buildings now. There's a CEQA that's becoming more and more stronger. So I think on the policy front, there are public policies that can be enacted that just can make this worse.
Cornelius, we don't talk about CEQA on this show. That's a dirty word.
Cornelius, you triggered the other issue. I spoke to the board of a significant mortgage company recently, and I said, here's some questions that I would ask if I were on your board. And on the policy front, I would ask the question, is mortgage lending still secured financing? With all the regulatory rules that have been placed on against foreclosure, is it still secured financing? And if not, how would you change your business practices to account for that? I asked it because I think it's a serious question.
Yeah.
Well, Doug, that was one of my questions. We've been talking about these trillions of dollars just hanging out in savings account. And all of a sudden, SB 9 here in California is where I can turn a single family home into a duplex. So I'm like, I got a lot of money. I've got a first in place. They don't get a say what I'm about to do. I'm about to step my toe into a market with wage issues, supply chain issues. I could cause myself a lot of problems as a homeowner, as you as the mortgage company have no idea it's coming. Fun.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Sean, a new good idea. Homeowners in trouble because they couldn't finish their product. Either that or a new TV show.
Well, you can just follow every permit. That's going to be an issue.
Seriously.
We'd also like to thank our gold sponsors, Inland Empire Board of Real Estate, Keller Williams Corona, Keystone CPA Inc., Las Prisas Escrow, Lavis Tax Wealth Management, NorCal REA, NSDREI, Pasadena Phoebe, Realty 411, and Think Realty Magazine. See isurvivedrealestate.com for event details, information on all our generous sponsors, watch the video uninterrupted, and to connect with our speakers.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the Hard Money tab.